You know another personal brand that I really, really like and love to point to?
Who is that?
Ellen DeGeneres. Mm. Because us old timers will recognize Ellen DeGeneres as a female comedian. She has a unique style. She's really fun. And she was just really Ellen, the way we know her. Very dry, very funny. I loved her. And yet she was hiding a huge part of who she was that was later revealed in her sitcom called Ellen, that both ended her career and took her to an entirely new, incredibly high-level career after. Do you remember that whole thing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I think Brené Brown, who's one of my favorite authors, speakers, check her out on YouTube. She has one of the most popular TED Talks of all time, talks about the power of vulnerability and shame, and is so business-oriented. It dovetails beautifully with business when a lot of people don't think it does. And she often talks about that, that when you really learn to embrace yourself and be yourself and say to the world, this is who I am, and make yourself vulnerable, that's when the world, your community, will often accept you. You'll always have haters. There's always going to be, you know, people out there who are haters. But Ellen is a great example of that, is that you may not like her stuff, you may not like her style, may not agree with her lifestyle, but you cannot disagree that she carries herself the way, you know, who she is. And I think that has led to incredible opportunities for her and a much bigger platform, like you pointed out.
For listeners who may not be aware of what we're talking about or may need a refresher, it went down like this. Ellen DeGeneres was the first, and she loves to talk about this, she was the first female comic on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson who was invited over to the couch.
Wow.
Now, that was for comics. That was like you, like an Academy Award. If you're a stand-up comedian, to do a set on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show was like Valhalla. To be invited afterwards, because Johnny found you funny, over to speak to him a little bit more was like icing on Valhalla. She was the first female ever to be invited to that. And she points that out. I think she has a Netflix special out called Relatable. As a stand-up comedian, she got to a level touring nationally where she was a headliner. You could go to any comedy club around the country, and I'm sure she headlined it. She got big enough that one of the big three broadcast networks, gave her a sitcom called Ellen. It was not unlike other sitcom shows featuring a stand-up comedian. You know, they're the center pole of the whole thing, and they've got a cast of quirky characters. I mean, she had her version of Kramer and Elaine and George Costanza. I mean, it was basically Seinfeld, but with a female tentpole, if you will. I think it was on maybe four seasons, very successful. You know, it wasn't Seinfeld huge, but it was very solid. I think maybe it was the fourth or fifth season. She was injecting more and more of herself into the show. And one of the big things about Ellen that the general public did not know was that she was gay, that she was a lesbian. And in fact, the season ending episode was her coming out on national TV. The first time anyone ever in that situation came out as a non-traditional sexual lifestyle person of any type. And it's an interesting episode. You can probably find it on YouTube or whatever. Interestingly enough, Laura Dern, the actress, big name Hollywood actress, she was on that episode. Very funny final scene. She's trying to come out to Laura Dern, and they're at an airport, and she's at the desk of the gate, back when you could actually walk to the gate to the airplane. And she leans in to tell Laura Dern very quietly, "I'm gay," and happens to be right on the mic. And so it goes over the whole PA. It's very, very funny. What's even more interesting is that the show went on to another season, and then it died, because they started injecting more LGBTQ politics into the comedy, which was this was a big move. And Middle America had not moved as quickly as the show did. And she was canceled, and then she went into the desert, into the wilderness for a number of years. And then she got her talk show. And her talk show has propelled her to the stratosphere, not only in America, but globally. I look at this as that, you know, Brené Brown, who we both really love, talks about vulnerability in a huge way. What is the most vulnerable thing she could have done as the star of a TV sitcom? Reveal something about herself that a certain percentage of the United States of America could not compute, but she did it anyway. And she's bigger now because of it. She truly shared of herself. And, you know, one of my guilty pleasures is, you know, my Facebook feed is always feeding me clips of Ellen shows. I don't watch it, but I watch those clips.
Sure.
They're just terribly funny. And the thing that I always see when I see her is her authentic self coming across the screen, and I think everybody feels it.
Yep. And that's one of the things I think is a really important point. As I work at building my own, and I've, you know, over the years, and teaching other people how to do it, whether it's students or people in business, because I think the best way to differentiate at this point in time and this point in history is to let people get to know who your staff is, who your leadership team is, so they can share out what the company or organization truly, truly stands for. But, you know, as we mentioned, I think in the last episode, that, you know, it's partially a self-discovery is, you know, you dig in and you start to figure out who you are and what you're about and what you feel comfortable in. And Brené Brown had a quote recently that just talked about that when you fully embrace who you are, there's no feeling in the world like it. Nothing can ever replace it. And you also have to be aware that not everybody's going to like it.
Yeah.
And you got to be cool with that. And that's where that Fast Company article we had talked about before was about be reactionary and give people what they want. No, again, you're not, and I want to underline this, you're not trying to purposely tick people off, but you want to let people know what's important to you, you know, what it is that you stand for. I work with a lot of professional athletes in the United States, and it's always interesting to me, a lot of them are African-American, is that people will say, why aren't athletes better role models? Why can't they stand up and do things and show kids, you know, how to do things right? And then they'll take a stand on something, and then those same people will say,
That's not the stand I wanted. Just
play your sport.
Yeah.
Just play your sport.
Stick to your lane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the idea is that, you know, when you become comfortable in who you are with the intent of helping the people that you want to connect with, not hurting somebody or ticking somebody off, but Ellen, when she did that, helped out a whole group of people who, you know, felt fear, felt shame, felt, you know, here's this person doing this thing. And it isn't who she is as a person. It's part of who she is as a person, just like part of what we show and who we are. You know, we don't show our whole selves as a personal brand. We only can show segments of it. But by revealing things that are truly deeply important, you really ingrain yourself as being a human being. I think Oprah is the other example that I absolutely love. When she started sharing her struggles and her story with, first of all, with weight and how many people's lives she changed, and anything that had Oprah associated with it immediately became a best-selling book or immediately became whatever. It was because if you ask people who are true fans of hers, it's because she stands for something that is about being yourself, not to harm others, but to be yourself to serve the greater good. And I think that's, you know, one of those things to think about. Obviously, we don't, and I don't think there's anybody in the community of listeners who has as big of a brand of either of those two people. You know, so it's not necessarily about aspiring to that, but it's really about, again, letting people know who you are and what's important to you, and knowing and feeling comfortable that sometimes that's going to turn some people off. And again, not intentionally, but some people are going to say, you know what? Don talks about wanting to work with companies that have some level of ethical impact in the communities they work in. That's a bunch of garbage. I don't want to work with him. And I'm sure I've had that happen before.
Sure.
And that's cool. And that they're not better than me and I'm not better than them. But I've also had companies who say, oh, you work with all of these nonprofits and you donate services to them as a part of what you do in terms of the money you generate through your business. I love that. I want to work with you. And so it's about what's important to me and living that and communicating that in your brand in some meaningful way, not just going off on, you know, this is who I am necessarily. You have to do it in context of what's relevant to your audience. But I think that example with Ellen and the stand that she took when she was true about who she was, it cost her in the short term, but in the long term, it really ended up creating a tribe and a community of people who are significantly more invested in her, significantly more loyal to her because it's who she is. And I would argue that if you sat down with her and talked to her, just like same thing with Oprah when she started talking about her weight and the issues of sexual abuse she experienced as a young woman, young teen actually, they would say that they became happier once they embraced who they were as well. And I think that's one of the things when you think about authenticity, and Mark Schaefer talks about this. I mentioned the book before because I'm a big fan of the book, big fan of Mark's too. But Marketing Rebellion, it's this book, and he keynoted at the Social Media Marketing World, did the closing keynote. It's really about people want to know who you are, and are you real, and are you true, and can they trust you? And if they trust you, do they feel comfortable doing business with you? And it's becoming this thing that we as marketers really need to pay attention to, is, you know, not being afraid to reveal some of who we are and what's important to us.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
Regular listeners of the podcast will know that I've mentioned Mark Schaefer's book, Marketing Rebellion, multiple times, and there's a reason for it. I read a lot of stuff, and most of it's garbage or warmed over conventional wisdom. Every once in a while, you meet someone like Mark Schaefer, you read his book, and you go, wow, you have literally coalesced a lot of stuff that's been floating around my head for years and put it in a phrase or a paragraph or a concept that totally captures what I've been thinking. And I was in the audience for that closing keynote at Social Media Marketing World, and it was such a tonic to see him on stage, because all week long, you're seeing some people who are kind of like growth hackers who are just trying to get your numbers up, a number of followers, likes, subscribers. You've got other people are saying, this is the recipe you do an Instagram post. You've got someone else saying, here's how to take your video from zero to 60,000 followers within 30 days and crap like that. And I just kind of put my finger down my throat when I see that stuff. I understand what they're doing. They're getting attention, and certain people are going to be attracted to that. I personally am not. Then you see Mark Schaefer get up there, and he's going through his whole Marketing Rebellion kind of universe of concepts. And I'm like, hallelujah. I mean, at one point I wanted to stand up and say, testify, brother. And I took a photo because he's on stage. Up behind him is a PowerPoint slide that says, the personal brand is the company brand. And when I saw that, I went, thank you, because that's 100% true. And Marketing Rebellion is not strictly about personal brands, although that does come into the book and what it's about. It's really about what is branding now in an age where, back in the day, when we talked about it in the last episode, you'd walk down the soda aisle, and if you're a red cola drinker, you look for the red package. If you're a blue cola drinker, you look for the blue package, and you're done. What happens when you're an Amazon Prime user and you type in cola, and it brings up a bunch of stuff, including the Amazon Basics cola that has a 5-star by 6,000 people review, and you go, huh, I might as well try that.
Yeah.
The algorithm is doing what you used to do for yourself, which was differentiate, decide based on what you like.
Yep.
So what does a brand do in an age where you've got an intermediary in the way, in the form of an algorithm? You aren't walking down that aisle to find the red package or the blue package. You're looking at the Amazon Basics package going, well, I'll try it. And God forbid you like it. All of a sudden, your brand loyalty is gone. A big point of Marketing Rebellion is that loyalty is dead.
Yeah. Yep.
Unless you earn it every day, every interaction, every engagement with the people who come to you, but most importantly, come to the people who work for the brand that you're involved with.
Oh, absolutely. And as an example, it's not a soda example. We're here in Wisconsin, so we'll have to talk beer, of course.
Right.
There's a very, very famous type of beer called Spotted Cow.
Right.
And it's made by the New Glarus Brewery, which is a very small town south of Madison, Wisconsin. And people are fanatical about it. There was actually I travel a fair amount, and people will often say, hey, you're from Wisconsin. Can you bring me a 6-pack of Spotted Cow? And then there was a picture last year of professional sports teams. The Chicago Cubs were playing the Milwaukee Brewers in Wisconsin. The thing with Spotted Cow is it's only sold in Wisconsin.
That's right.
They took a picture of, somebody took a picture of the bus, because the Chicago Cubs drove a bus up to Milwaukee to play the Brewers. It's close enough. And where the luggage area was all filled with spotted cow, the entire thing.
Well, funny thing is, my family and I just got back from a family reunion in Colorado. Mm-hmm. What did we take out there? A 24-can case of Hopalicious from Ale Asylum, my current favorite of American Pale Ale, and a whole big case of bottles of Spotted Cow from Mount Horeb, Wisconsin.
And part of the reason I bring that up is because one of the things Mark talks about in that book is about how about two-thirds of our marketing isn't our marketing, it's our customers talking about us, word of mouth, shares, etc. And the interesting thing with the personal branding article that you brought up from Fast Company is it was written by a Gen Xer.
Yes.
So millennials and Gen Zs, they look for the story behind the companies and they are willing to pay for that story if it's a true, real story. And they will support a small brewery like New Glarus because they stand for something. Something as simple as you can't sell our beer outside of the state of Wisconsin. We're a Wisconsin company. We're going to be committed to small batch, really high quality. And they actually made it on the Dan Patrick Show, which is a national radio show, sports radio show with a huge listenership. And it was because they said, you know, this is what we stand for. We could go big. We could make this huge. We could sell out to Miller Lite and Coors. Or no, we love making beer. We're not in this to sell our brewery. We're in it because we love making beer. And you know what? We love Wisconsin and we want to be exclusive to Wisconsin. And when people hear that story, I don't drink beer. I hate it. But I swear, people that I've given the beer to, they're like, oh, it's good. It's really good. But then you tell the story and they're like, oh, that's really cool. And you got this little bit of exclusivity with it. But it's who they are. They want to stay a small family-owned Wisconsin company.
They know who they are and they are being it.
Absolutely. And that's where if you look at craft sodas, you know, when you brought up that, you know, craft soda sales, craft beer sales, you know, all of those things have exploded. The craft industry, the locally produced industries have really exploded because people want to know, where is my food coming from? Where is my product coming from? Who is my mechanic? You know, on all of these different levels. Again, Mark talks a lot about that in that book. And whether or not we like it, the thing I love about what Mark does, and I've been a fan of his since his very first book, The Tao of Twitter, which I've used as a required book in my class in the past, is that he thoroughly researches. He doesn't say, this is my opinion. He thoroughly researches and he shows whether or not we like it, the majority of our marketing is not our marketing. That includes personal branding, because if you look at things like if people look at your reviews on LinkedIn, or what are people going to do if they look up your personal brand, you know, they're thinking of hiring you, they might listen to some shows about you or try to reach out to some people who might have interacted with you and say, well, is this guy really like this? Is this woman really like this? Are they, you know, they seem really flowery and upbeat? Or they, is this how they really carry themselves? I know with Gary Vaynerchuk, I know a couple of people who know him, people would often ask that when he was first starting, is that who he really is? And it's like,
yeah,
that's who he is.
Yeah.
Now the cool thing with Gary, just as a quick tangent, is if you watch his first year or two of content production, he wasn't comfortable in his own skin. So he was trying to be something he wasn't, but as he got practice at creating or documenting, you know, however you want to say it, I was listening to your episode with Paul. And so it reminded me of the documenting versus creating. But the idea being that when he did that, he learned more and more and more about who he was and what he stood for.
Yeah, and that's really instructive because you can go online and find some Gary Vaynerchuk wine library videos of him talking about Merlot, a specific Merlot or something. And he looks like what he was back then, which was a wine merchant in the tri-state area of New York or whatever. And he knew all about wines. He knew all this stuff. He had a crappy video camera shooting him against a white wall, I think. Yeah. And he'd just have the bottle and he'd talk about it and why it was good and, you know, et cetera. And he was, it was a little bit better than watching paint dry, but not much.
And he admits to that. He's like, if you watch the first, he did 1,000 episodes total. And he said, if you watch the first 100 episodes, they're painful, you know. But he said, I knew I was in it. And this is one of the things I respect about Gary is that he said, I knew I was in it for the long game. So I was willing to look and feel and struggle to try to figure out who I was and what I was about. So what I'll often do in my personal branding class at the university is I'll show his videos today, like maybe a daily V, and I'll say, what do you guys think Gary is like? And they'll say, man, his production quality is so good. He's so, I could never be like that. And then I show the very first and second episode of Wine Library TV that he did. And it's like a totally different person. And that's part of personal branding too, that you have to be aware of. Is part of it is as you figure out who you are and becoming comfortable in your own skin. And in this day and age where people pay so much attention to the appearance of who they are because of social, really learning to become comfortable in who you are is a little bit of a process. So not being afraid to, you know, take the time to grow and discover. And I tell this to my professional clients all the time when I'm working with companies is, you know, when I'm working with a CEO or some leadership is like, you guys, you people are going to have to learn how to get comfortable. So just know we're going to do, this is going to take some repetitions. You're not going to get it right away.
Well, a previous episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast featured George B. Thomas, mm-hmm. who is a HubSpot expert. He's a really dynamic video personality. He gives a lot of hints, tips, and tricks on dealing with HubSpot for inbound marketing. So mm-hmm. he's niched himself down
yep.
to a very specific place. And I had him on the podcast because I got to know him at a Dream Bank event.
Yeah, yeah.
Then later saw him at Social Media Marketing World, and we hit it off. And I asked him a question, very simple question. I said, you've done a ton of these HubSpot videos. How many did you have to do before you stopped hearing crickets in your audience? I mean, literally, when he knew someone was actually watching. And he said, 75.
Wow.
And I'm like, really? You did 75 without the immediate feedback of, ooh, I got 20 listeners last week. Now I have 40.
Yeah.
He said, no, I didn't know I had any listeners.
Yeah.
Until about 75 and people are seeing me at a conference and they recognize me from the videos
yeah. or
they reach out to me via email to ask me if I'd come speak to their group or whatever. He didn't get the feedback on those videos. And when I asked him about it, I said, well, that's kind of terrible. And he said, no, that was great because the first 50 were terrible. I started getting good.
Yeah.
And that's when people started watching. So I hope they didn't go all the way back.
But, yeah.
But anyway, what you're saying is exactly that there is no shortcut.
Yep.
You know, like you look at name your nightly broadcaster, newscaster, whatever. Do you know where they started out?
Yep.
They started out not even in the Madison, Wisconsin market.
Yeah.
They started out in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
You know, trying to read the news and grow up.
Yep.
Because the worst thing you can be on the nightly news is someone who looks like they don't know what they're talking about.
Yep.
So they build their ability, they trade up locations based on who they are, what they do, how they do it.
Yep.
They build their personal brands. Some of them are going to do a fork in the road where they go, you know what? They had me do weather and I have a science bent. I really enjoyed that. I'm going to go back to school and get a meteorology degree.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else might go, oh, I'm going sports.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Someone else might dive deeper into, you know, foreign policy or things like that, because they know, you know what? I don't want to be reading the hog futures report anymore. I want to be in a war zone, or I want to go to the G5, the G8, the G12 events globally. Well, good. You now know yourself. You now have a goal.
Yep.
How are you going to achieve that? Now, Don, I know that you've talked to me about some of the major focuses that you have personally for yourself mm-hmm. within the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to me about that philosophy of identifying your goals and then saying yes to the things that further those goals and no to the things that don't?
Yeah. And it basically the thing that, and this, it's been said many times by many people way smarter than me. My favorite example, obviously, is that I like to bring up is Richard Branson, because Richard Branson is not somebody, if you look at all of the data of what typically makes a successful person successful, he doesn't fit any of it. Yet he has done a tremendous amount of incredible good, incredible business work. I mean, he's a phenomenal, I mean, he's done a lot, you know, more than a lot of us combined. Anyway, he said the number one word that an entrepreneur can learn or a person can learn in their life is no. And one of the challenges that I face as a yes person is I like to do everything. You know, the ADHD kicks in and I want to do this and that and this and that. Squirrel, 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 chase all of these things. And what you do when you set those goals is they become your filters. They become your filters of, is that a squirrel I can chase or should chase at this moment? Yes or no. And for me, I literally need to read my top three goals every day. Otherwise, I get distracted. And those three goals help me remember whether it's a deeply, deeply personal goal or a business goal. Should I go for this right now or should I not? And again, I have ADHD, so I love to chase things. I love to go after things. It's like a simple, simple way of saying, what is the goal? And like, for example, when I'm working with my students, if the goal is to learn who you are, one of the challenges will be for 30 days, produce 30 pieces of video, for example, 1 or 2 minute videos. And why do that versus create one video and I'll give you 30 days to create it? The reason is by doing things daily and consistently, you'll learn a lot more about who you are, get more comfortable with your voice, you'll get in more repetitions and you'll get better. Very much like what George was saying, that the first 50 episodes, he stumbled, he looked, you know, he didn't sound good, it wasn't great stuff. Then he got a stride. Gary Vaynerchuk, 100 videos before he hit his stride. You know, it's going to be no different for any of us. So knowing that the filters of those goals, and you know, one of your goals is to build a real brand that helps you achieve meaningful work and have a bigger impact, is to spend time saying, is what I'm doing right now helping me learn more about who I am? And is it also helping me push the boundaries of me actually putting myself out there a little?
So do I understand you correctly that you have physically written down those goals posted someplace that you can see every day?
I do. And I have an alarm with Google Keep that goes off every day. And that alarm goes off every morning at 6 a.m. And I look at that and I quick read through them. And I say, this is what my day is about. There's going to be distractions. There's going to be tough choices. There's going to be things that pop up. This is my anchor of what I'm trying to, and I need to do that. Some people don't need to, but I need to, if I don't, I get off track. So wow. I have them written down and I read them at night in a journal where I journal about my day, just a short little paragraph or so about what I did. And then digitally on the phone, because I know I'm going to have that phone with me throughout the day. So if I ever need to refer to it, go back to it. And that's kind of my simple morning routine that helps me. Because you're going to get distracted. You're going to have tough things come up. I mean, that was one of the things we were talking about pre the recording, is sometimes you're not going to have easy choices. And I don't know anybody who does. If you don't keep yourself anchored with those boundaries of those goals, you're going to get off track. For me, it has to be a simple binary. Is this helping me get closer to becoming that person or achieving this thing? If it is, then I do it. If it's not, I have to painfully move away from it because I want to chase it. But it's like, no, Don, this is not what you said you're going to do. So there's some certain things, for example, professionally with content production, where I help a lot of clients with content production, but I'm not great at it myself because I'm helping them. And it's like, no, for the next 6 months, I need to get better for my own good. I might not want to produce today because I might not be as good as, you know, you with your videos. I love the videos that you do, that you post documenting part of your day. Well, I have an Android and so I can't have the same app that you have. Well, it's like, so what? Yeah, if my goal is to get better, just do it. Do the stinking video. Don't, you know, get caught up in comparing myself. I might look at your stuff and say, this is where I aspire to get to, but right now I'm going to put in a rep to try to prove to myself that I can do it.
Oh, Don, that is so good to hear, because I'll be honest with you. Those videos are the videos that I can get done. Mm. That's different from the videos that perhaps I would like to do, yes. You know, because I would love to do things with swooshing in, you know, animations and stuff. I don't have the time for that.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about the app I use on my videos before. It's called Spark Camera, a $2.99 app that you can get on the iOS store for Apple iPhones.
Why you're not on Android, I don't know.
I know.
If anybody knows a good Android
But anyway, until I found that app, I couldn't do videos and get them done and posted in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
We live in a society that worships the shortcut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there aren't any. You know, we always hear about the Justin Bieber who posts a thing on YouTube. One guy sees it and he's got a, you know, $7 million record deal. To which I say, one, you heard about it for one reason. It's remarkable. Because it doesn't happen. It is the black swan that is in a whole flock of white ones that you see. I want to talk about another personal brand that I really love in the music space, an Americana singer-songwriter named Brandi Carlile.
Mm.
Now, my wife and I went to go see her live at Summerfest this past summer, and she started telling a little bit of the story of her and her band's career. She's been doing this for 19 years,
wow.
And this was a huge year for her. She got 6 Grammy Awards, one for Best Americana Song and, you know, Best Female Singer-Songwriter. Just, it blew up huge. but it took her 19 years. And when she was at the lakefront at Summerfest, she was not the headliner of the main stage. Mm-hmm. She was the headliner of one of the, I think, seven stages or whatever at Summerfest. So still, there are 5,000 to 10,000 people in that theater or that stage. And she's was up there and she said, "We love coming to Milwaukee." And this was not one of those bands. We're in Milwaukee. Yay. Everybody say
yeah,
yay.
Yeah.
She said, "No, we love coming to Milwaukee because we first came here," and she named the place.
Yeah.
Everybody knew it as, "Oh, that's like a 50-person play."
Yeah.
Then she talked about the Eagles Club, which bigger place. And then they went to the Pabst Theater. And when her label said, "We want to do a video, we'd love to do it in a city. What do you think?" They said, "Let's go to Milwaukee."
How cool.
And they're like, "Why?" Say, "Because Milwaukee loves us and we love Milwaukee." And everybody in that whole theater just was embracing her.
Cool.
But it took her 19 years doing the same type of stuff. I mean, she writes new songs all the time. Her band works up new material, but it's in her, "I know who I am. Mm-hmm. I know what I do." And by the way, where did she come up in music? Seattle during grunge. So she should have been, well, she couldn't have been because she was in a male wearing flannel. Exactly. She couldn't have been in a grunge band. But anyway, huge year for her. Took 19 years to get there because she did not shortcut it. There are no shortcuts.
Yep.
There are efficiencies
yes.
that you can learn about. And that's what we want to share here on the Nonfiction Brand Podcast when we can. One of the efficiencies I would love to give you, and I think we both will recommend this, is pick up Mark Schaefer's book, Marketing Rebellion, because there are a lot of conceptual ideas in there that you need to wrap your head around as you seek to create and build your personal or small business brand.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing you'll learn, and this is where I love Mark's work, is you'll learn about mindset, and you'll really learn to think about, when you are a consumer, how do you think? And it'll blow your mind because it's backed by data. You know, it isn't an opinion. It's backed by data. And when you stop and you think about where the world is going, it gives you an opportunity. And I think this is where, for the nonfiction branding audience, it's fantastic. It goes to show that if you are a nonfiction brand, you buy into the mindset and you live it, you are putting yourself at a significant advantage over people who think, I'll just tell people what I want, you know, kind of like what the Fast Company article was about, you know, that it's smoke and mirrors, or, you know, I don't really need to stand for anything. You'll see that with the generations that now has the money and is coming into, you know, having a lot of economic power, they're looking for the nonfiction story.
Well, and a great example of that is, if I were booking an event looking for speakers, I might have a slot for business development, for marketing operations, for fill in the blank, whatever. And one of those might be social media for small businesses. Mm-hmm. If you are looking for social media small businesses on Google, you're going to come up with a whole bunch of different speakers. But if you know Don Stanley is an expert on social media for small businesses, what are they going to plug in that Google box?
Mm-hmm.
Don Stanley. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. They aren't looking for what you do. They're looking for you because you do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of nonfiction branding and building your personal or small business brand authentically to be completely true and completely you. Well, this is the second half of our conversation with Don Stanley, an instructor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Life Sciences Communication Department. So great to have you on, because every time we do, my 25-minute episodes balloon out to 35 to 40. But I love that, because it's great to test ideas with you, to learn new stuff from you. And I want to thank you again, Don, for being on.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
You'll be hearing Don in the future, because one of the nice things about being in a relatively small town like Madison, Wisconsin, the capital of Wisconsin in the United States of America, is that we're pretty geographically close together. Yeah. And it's very easy for Don to come over to my palatial podcasting studio. Yes,
with the two best account executives in the world.
Oh, yeah. My dogs. we've got Olive, the Black Labrador Retriever, and our brand new little account executive in training, Tilly, who we think mom, Tilly's a rescue dog, so we can't be 100% sure, but we think mom was a Staffordshire Terrier, which is kind of like a pit bull terrier, but maybe a little smaller. And I looked at her webbed feet, her paws. They are more webbed than our Labrador Retriever. So I'm thinking dad was not just a lab, but an aqua lab. So we'll find out. But it's sure wonderful to not only share this great podcast conversation with you, but also share the love of dogs as well.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime I get to play with dogs, count me in.
All right. Well, I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and he is
Don Stanley.
And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.